You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during our special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 3. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $22,000 goal by March 16th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you and you're welcome.
Be sure to tune in to Radio Lost and Found. It's the show that puts the OO in KBOO. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found sounds, forgotten records, outre recordings, and more. Coming to you every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
KBOO.
Radio, where progressive dialogue meets local action. Every fourth Wednesday of the month, join us for insights and solutions on critical issues impacting Oregon. Let's create change together. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Hello, Portland and beyond. This is Sherry, and you are listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Today is Wednesday, February 28th, and it's 7 o'clock. So if you're listening live, we're live at the station, and I'm super excited to have this show tonight. It's packed. Totally packed. This is like my first packed show. So thank you for listening. We are running through a set of menu items here tonight. So first off, I gotta tell you about our All Thrills No Frills KBOO membership drive. This is volume 3. So if you want to help us, we are trying to earn $22,000 in this membership drive, and supporting KBOO as a member today is so easy. You just go on over to kboo.fm/give, and you can become a member, which means you have some status here, right? KBOO is 56 years old this year. There's other ways you can give if you want to. So you can go and click on the red donate button on the mobile app. You can text KBOO 244321. And for those of you who, since I have been here on this show, I've met a few people who do not have a computer, do not have a cell phone. Can you believe it? They do not have a smartphone. They are not walking around with a tether. They like to use paper cash, and they like to mail their checks to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97214. I have done the membership drive, and we'll be doing that again later. And we do need your help, because we want to keep bringing our vision of what progressive Portland might look like. To start off tonight, I was running down some news stories so I'd have something to talk about. And the first one I want to talk with you about is a summer alert. PBOT has announced quote, over $100 million in transportation investments across the city and on several of Portland's most dangerous streets. So that's a quote from the article in at portland.gov. The thing is, this last past winter, I don't know if you guys remember, but PBOT was saying that they have no money to plow the streets. Zero money to plow the streets. And they, so this is quite interesting. So I had to look further. How are they getting the money for this $100 million project? Well, it seems that later in the article, and I quote, funding for these major investments relies largely on outside sources like federal and state grants, as well as dedicated local funding from your tax dollars, guys. Fix our streets, 10 cents gas tax is some of the funding, and transportation system development charges. Local transportation partners such as Metro and TriMet are also significant investors. PBOT continues to grapple with, they note, they continue to grapple with a shortfall in parking revenue and state highway funding. I wonder if that's where their plow funding comes from. You can read this article at portland.gov/transportation/news, and it's in there. Secondly, before I go to the second one, I have two people here that are looking kind of like, hey, I thought you were going to talk to us. I have two awesome guests tonight. I have Nick Walden Poblin. He is Nick Walden Walden Poblin lives in Sandy, Oregon, at the base of Mount Hood. You live not very far from me, actually.
Oh, okay.
Where he is running to represent House District 52 in the State House. Nick served over a decade as a student health advisor at Portland State University and worked most recently as an alcohol and drug prevention specialist at the city of Sandy. Nick is the former first vice chair of the Democratic Party of Clackamas County. He currently serves as president of the Oregon Trail Democrats and is chair of the Democratic Party of Oregon's Healthcare Caucus. You are a busy guy.
I am a busy guy. That's a lot of stuff. And when you say it back, it sounds like more than I signed up for. But no, I did.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm really glad to be here.
I'm so excited to talk with you.
Good.
And we'll get to you in just a moment. So you have been a very patient man, and I really appreciate you being here. So the second one, my second guest that we'll be talking with tonight, and I want you guys to converse a little bit throughout this once I get through this next story, but is Ray Gordon.
Hello,
Ray.
Nice to see you.
Ray is, I'm not getting too excited or anything. Ray is working to be our commish singer. Ray Gordon is a community leader and volunteer, small business owner, musician, and former Clackamas County employee.
Oh, yes.
She is running for Clackamas County Commissioner seat 4. To give a voice to everyone.
Oh, yes.
And like Ray and I talk all the time, and she is so dedicated to giving a voice to everyone.
Definitely. Everybody needs to have the same opportunity to be heard and to be seen.
I think that's fabulous. I do. That's something that's super important. Ray is also the chair of the Cascade Blues Association.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She continually forgets to put that in there.
Oh, yeah, I do. Oh, you mean the president of the
Oh, you
Cascade
are the president. I thought you were the chair.
Okay. Oh, so I could be chair.
So she's president of the Blues Cascade Blues Association. And that's the people who run the Blues Festival, is that correct?
You know, they don't, but we're a big partner, so we give a lot of the volunteers and we work in tangent. It's not ours, but it's actually the Fuller Events company, and it's an incredible partnership that I've love to have built up, and we continue to build it up.
It's so much fun.
It is.
So much fun. I loved it. I've been anchor there 2 years in a row, and I'm excited I'm going to do it again this year. Only I'm not allowed to do all 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
So I tried that last year. It didn't work out. Anyways, so the next story I want to talk about real quick, you guys, because you guys are all in an election, and so is Sam Adams.
Oh.
Can you believe it? Sam Adams has plans to run for Multnomah County Board District 2. And as you guys may know, this should be an interesting race considering Mr. Adams has a history in Portland. He was a consistent presence during the Vera Katz administration as chief of staff. Then he became mayor of Portland amid scandal. And then he ran for the city council and lost. And then he spent time under Ted Wheeler's administration, but was fired, though he says he was resigned. He resigned. And we'll have to see how that election turns out for Multnomah County. You can learn more about Mr. Sam Adams' run in the Willamette Week this week. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know. He's like a cat who's had 9 lives. I think.
yeah.
And I don't know what number we're on right now.
Probably 7.
Yeah, number 7, I think.
Number 7, yeah. Does he have a chance, you think?
I don't know. He's got name recognition, but I don't know if that's good name recognition. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, it sounds like he has a roller coaster thing going on.
Mm.
You know, it sounds like he's trying to do a second chance. I'd have to see what his, you know, what his issues and his solutions are. And I think he might have a chance, actually.
I lived in Seattle during his tenure. In fact, I moved to Seattle while Vera Katz was still mayor. And I knew a little bit about him. I remembered his name, but I don't remember any accomplishments that he made.
Yeah, that's the hard part is when there's so much scandal, it takes away from what you're actually doing.
Well, that's really unfortunate. That's what ended his mayorship prematurely, as some people might say. Yeah.
Yeah, the scandal thing. Yeah.
Okay. But he's got some, you know, he's got some bravery there.
He doesn't give up, does he?
No.
Good for him. You know, tenacity, that'll get you a lot of places.
Yeah.
So closer in, we have Kevin Fitz running for Multnomah County Board District 1. You can find out more about Kevin Fitz at vote4kevinfitz.com. And you can also find out about Moses Ross, but I want to talk about Kevin for a moment. Kevin was on Coin 6 on Eye on Pacific Northwest Politics or something like this. I'm not familiar with the show. I just watched it for him. And he is a mental health care advocate.
Oh, good.
And he has tons of ideas about how to deal with the homelessness and how to deal with the mental health issues that Multnomah County is currently dealing with. What are your thoughts? Do you guys know about him at all?
I'm actually friends with Kevin's online on Facebook, and I would say that there is nobody who is a stronger, more involved, more dedicated advocate for mental health. And so when he was talking about running, I was really excited about seeing where he would land. I'm really excited about his candidacy.
Okay.
And you have experience in that field, correct?
I do, yeah. Having worked with mental health issues and with drug and alcohol prevention, he's somebody who's very much simpatico.
Yeah. He seems like a wonderful guy. I've been talking with him a lot lately, and he seems fabulous.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Our co-host, and you may know him, is Moses Ross, and I'm only going to say that Moses Ross is running for Portland City Council District 4. You can visit Moses's website at moses4pdx.com for information on Moses and the things that he's been able to accomplish in the metro area. He is running for District 4, so you can go look at the issues in District 4 and see his influence there. Do you guys know him at
all?
I do
know Moses as well, through the DPO. Yep.
Yeah, and he's done so much great work on its honest elections.
Yes.
Yeah,
with Honest Elections work, definitely. And Honest Elections, I didn't write this down because I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about it, but Honest Elections and the state are kind of doing the beating heads at the moment because IP9 and IP42. IP42 is the unions in business campaign finance reform sort of kind of plan. And Honest Elections has IP9, which is a much stricter, much more transparent piece of legislation that is headed for the ballot in November. And IP 42 is headed for the ballot as well. They both are within the petitioning stages right now, working for July 5th is qualification day. IP 9 has 80,000 more signatures to go. We need they need 180,000 signatures.
Okay.
So what happened was the state legislature decided that grappling with two competing ballot measures in November was just going to be too much for Portlanders or for Oregonians to deal with, because both of them will impact the state constitution and laws regarding our elections, right? So they decided to go and write their own. However, they didn't release it until the night before the testimony. So you have Common Cause, League of Women Voters, Indivisible, all these organizations who have been fighting for strict campaign finance reform, like total transparency, so we can actually get some things done in this mm-hmm. state, wrote opposition. There are so many opposition letters in there. And Dan Meek actually wrote his as if it was a piece of legislation that he, or an initiative that he wanted to put through. So that was interesting. But, excuse me. So it looks like Honest Elections, the unions, and the state are talking.
Good.
Oh, good.
So we may have some news about campaign finance reform as an actual piece of legislation coming through sometime soon.
Mm. That's great.
If nothing else, we are still headed for the ballot, right? IP9 and IP42 are headed for the ballot. So yay, we're getting there. We might actually, we are only one of five states in the entire nation with no campaign finance
really?
Limits.
Yeah, we call it the Wild Wild West for a reason, right?
It
yeah.
is. Yeah. 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 So I'm going to do one more story and then we will get to my fine people here. We still have a little bit of time. So nationally, I heard today, and I was jumping up and down. I'm so excited about this, though I probably shouldn't be. It's probably insensitive. But we learned today that Mitch McConnell is stepping down at the end of 2024. Yes, it's about time. I've been wanting this for 10 years,
take
if not longer.
Break.
And cake. Please, I need cake.
yeah, can I have a piece?
Yeah, exactly. It's about time. This morning, the AP reported that he is the longest-serving Senate leader in history. So I guess he would be the longest-serving Republican Senate leader in history. He just turned 82, and as many of you might know, he has had lapses over the past year, and those have actually been a little
scary.
I mean, yeah, I don't like the guy. He's super intelligent, and the reason why I don't like him is because he's really ineffective for what he does in torturing the people of Kentucky.
Right.
But, you know, he did say one of life's most unappreciated talents is to know when it's time to move on to life's next chapter. So I stand before you today to say that I will be it will be the end of my last term as a Republican leader in Senate. This will be.
So he didn't say he's necessarily stepping down from the Senate. So we don't have, right? He's going to step down as leader.
Yeah, you brought that up. Oh.
So we may not be done with him completely.
Yeah, because Nancy Pelosi didn't leave. She
not
just stepped down.
Yeah,
she stepped down. But he's having some health issues.
You know, and I don't like to see that. It's sad. He's an adversary. There are things that nothing that we agree on
exactly.
at all. But at the same time, you don't want to see someone suffering from health issues like that, especially on a public stage. You know, I'm cognizant at the same time, though, that Mitch McConnell has enacted legislation over the years that has made sure that other folks who fall down
can't get back up. Exactly.
And so that really concerns me. And so, you know, it's great that he has all the resources necessary to make sure that he's healthy and lasts until he's 82. Wouldn't it be nice if everybody else had those same resources and wasn't rationing healthcare?
Right. Exactly. And do you have any, Ray, do you have an opinion on this?
Well, I like what you said about, you know, knowing when it's time to step down.
Right.
And I think that was last year.
It was like 20 years.
At least last year. But I like that he's stepping down, and I think that's a form of service too, for him to step down and let us kind of heal.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. And the people of Kentucky, I wish them so much luck with a new leadership.
Definitely.
So I need to mention again our All Thrills, No Frills Volume 3 membership drive for 2024, February 13th through March 16th, 2024. Our original goal is $22,000. And we need your support here at KBOO for us to continue bringing you news and guests and fun talk and all the things that we have going here. You can give in multiple different ways. You can go on over to kboo.fm/give. You can click on the red donate button on the mobile app. You can text, if you have a cell phone, you can text KBOO to 44321. That's KBOO to 44321. And for those of you who don't like all the electronic gadgets and stuff, you can mail your check, if you wish, to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97214. I'll probably have another chance to tell you that in a little bit. Before I go on, I want to thank Zach. Last month, Zach is here. He's my board op now until Moses comes back, but hopefully.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'll hang with you. You know that.
Thanks. Last week, I tried to, or last month, I tried to do the show and take phone calls and run the board and do the music and everything myself. And I'm, I really love KBOO, but they're like these studios are probably 40, 50 years old at least. And so you have to take off your headphones and pick up the phone and blah, blah, blah. So thank you. Thank you. You saved the show, sir.
Glad to be here.
My first guest this evening, I told you who he is earlier. He's Nick Walden. Poblin,
you're so Poblin. Close. There you
Poblin.
Go.
Poblin, I lived in Polsbo, Washington.
Oh,
and your name is really Poblin. It's very uh-huh. close to Polsbo.
Okay.
So, as you know, he's lives in Sandy, and he's running for the House District 52. And so, I have some questions for you, Nick,
sure.
if you wish to entertain me for a moment.
Absolutely.
So, as far as your background and motivation, you've spent over a decade as a student health advisor at Portland State University, or you did,
mm-hmm.
and you're passionate about health policy. How has this experience shaped your approach to healthcare policy, and what specific healthcare initiatives would you prioritize?
That's a good question. I think before I can reiterate to you what I learned in that position, I have to kind of explain to you a little bit about how I got there. And that was in 2007, my first week of grad school, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor at the base of my brain. And everything changed. Everything went crazy. And I went to the university administration at the time. I don't know where I got the gumption to do it, but I was kind of in that fight or flight mode where you're going to get up or you're going to lay down. And I said, the health insurance plan that the university had at the time was really awful. It was a shelf product that the university purchased without really looking at. They didn't negotiate it. It was just there. And it would not have gotten me through that crisis. And so I went to the university and I said, I'm going to start a student health advisory board. We're going to talk about the issue of healthcare. We're going to get more students involved. And within 3 months, we renegotiated the health insurance and fired the insurance company the university was using, renegotiated insurance for 28,000 students, added trans health benefits. This was in 2007, at a time when universities wow. didn't add trans health benefits. Yeah. And it was part of the mandatory plan. So everybody had access to basic healthcare. And when it came time for me to graduate, the university said, hey, wait a minute, we don't want you to leave. Why don't you stay? And they created the position of student health advisor for me. So I became the trans health advocate and student health advisor. I was one of the very few trans health advocates in the nation at the time, because this is almost 20 years ago, which I've just dated myself really badly, unfortunately. So what did that teach me? I learned a lot about the difference between healthcare and health insurance. And that the two don't always equate the same thing. That health insurance does not mean that you end up with the care that you need.
Right.
And that we need to battle things like deductibles. We need to focus on making sure that out-of-pocket maximums are low enough that there actually are a safety net and that they capture people. I saw, I ran into students who were in their 50s who had never had health insurance.
Wow.
and who came to me like they had just bought a new car with their card and said, what am I going to do first? Where do I go? Who do I see? And that was a great thing to have happen. It's a sad state for us to be in, though, that you have to be 50 and at a university kind of recreating yourself in order to get health insurance.
Right.
So I'm really proud of the work that I did there. I think it has informed me on how I look at prescription prices. I love the new bill that Deb Patterson passed recently here in Oregon that mimics the national cap on insulin.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've definitely, prescription prices have gotten so crazy. I'm a diabetic as a result of my brain tumor. I ended up developing diabetes. So I know all about rationing. I know about what it's like to go to a pharmacy and not be able to purchase all of your prescriptions at one time. That's a reality for me. And so that $35 cap, that's something that you would see me be a super advocate of if I'm elected.
Yeah, definitely. We could use that too.
Yeah.
We could use that. And pets too.
Oh, yeah. Pets. I have a diabetic cat.
So do I.
Oh, yeah. Oh. That's how you know you're getting on in life, when you are diabetic yourself and your cat is also diabetic.
We'll have to have a talk.
Yeah, we should.
Because I have ideas for you
too. Okay, good.
So how about affordable housing? That's the next subject. So on your campaign website, you emphasize that affordable housing is the foundation to thriving communities. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on your plans to increase affordable housing availability in House District 52 because it's needed? And how do you intend to balance growth with maintaining community character?
One of the things that I'm really concerned about is preserving the historical heritage of the towns and cities that go up and down that mountain. They are very important. And so one of the first things that I will talk about, housing is as a necessity. It comes up every day as I'm talking to constituents. The need for businesses to have workers is at play here too. So there are a number of businesses up and down the mountain in District 52 who have come to me and said, look, Nick, I'm ready to expand. I'm ready to build on. I'm ready to hire new people. I literally can't find houses for the folks to come to work at my business. And so it's not just a housing issue. It's an economy issue. It's a big issue. I am very, very supportive of limiting our urban growth boundaries. I think we need to be responsible about growth. So that means that we need to be creative with the spaces that we have. And I've been talking to folks like, I was talking to someone in Cascade Locks the other day, that the Port Authority there has access to some land that's in city limits. And it's like, instead of expanding our urban growth boundary and unnecessarily swallowing up more farmland, we need to be thoughtful about these kinds of projects that we can be supporting in District 52. I'm also really supportive of the governor's new housing proposal that would spend over $500 million on housing issues. I think that's really important. I don't want to see, though, a situation where we end up giving up our urban growth boundary in order to build what are supposed to be low and medium income housing, and then it doesn't end up being low and medium income housing. So I'm very cognizant of that.
Yeah, there's some controversy about that as well. I'm going to have you answer one more question, and then we're going to go to Ray. So your vision for there's a couple that I really, maybe you and I can have a talk later, but your vision for the future. Your campaign slogan emphasizes building a larger table, not a higher table.
Thank you. Not a higher wall.
Not
a higher wall.
Can you expand on what this vision means for residents of House District 52 and how you intend to bring about the inclusive growth?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of that slogan, the building a longer table, not a higher wall, comes from the fact that I am a small town Democrat. And when you are a small town Democrat, in order to get things done, you don't always have the luxury of looking at who has an R or a D behind their name. It's more important that we get projects done and that we work together. And I think about the kind of will that I saw come together in House District 52 when we had storms recently that just came through.
Yep.
And also during the wildfires, my family was one of those families that evacuated during that time. As you probably did too, if you're a resident who lives near me. So I'm very cognizant of that as well. How do I bring more voices to the table? I think what it really boils down to is making sure that I am on the ground in all four of these districts, or all four of these counties. So my district is interesting in that it includes East Multnomah, East Clackamas, all of Hood River, and then Northwest Wasco.
Wow.
So we've got four counties to compete in the district. I'm going to be down on the ground knocking on those doors in every one of those districts. And I am committed to doing this myself and making sure that the constituents of this district are meeting their representative. I'm right now committed to doing sometimes as many as, and Ray probably knows this too, as many as 6 hours a day doing cold calls, just talking to PCPs, former and past, and folks, and finding out what those issues are that are important to them. And I'm hearing things that are, you know, the average things that we hear frequently, housing and the economy and Measure 110, which we won't have a chance to talk about, unfortunately. But
that's a deep issue.
That is a deep issue. That's a deep issue. And I come from a family, a background of alcohol and drug abuse, which informs me. And so I could talk all day about that issue. Yeah.
So real quick, your family.
Yes.
Can you give us a quick rundown of your family?
Yeah. So I grew up in Harrisburg, which is a little bit north of Eugene. Yeah. I'm the oldest of five. My mother passed away at 54 at a young age due to a lack of health care. And I became the head of the family at that age. And my mother had me at 16, had my sister in her 30s. So there's a pretty big age gap there. And I largely became a parent at that.
Yeah.
And I have 10 nieces and nephews who I cherish and see every weekend, if that's possible. Campaigning, it's a little bit difficult, but I'm committed to making sure I see them. My husband and I have been together for 22 years.
Wow.
We met at the University of Oregon. He's a grade school teacher in Gresham. We ended up officially getting married a couple years ago, but have been together for over two decades. And every time I say that out loud, I'm shocked by that number. But
it's a long time, right?
Yeah, it's a long time.
Thank you so much for
all you do.
Where can people find out more about you?
You can go to my website. It's NWP4FOR Oregon.com. And you can find out more about my campaign and how to sign up, how to volunteer, and about events that are coming up.
That's Nick Walden. Poblin?
You got it.
All right. Poblin.
Okay. He is running for District 50, House District 52, and I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Our next guest, as I was speaking of earlier, and these guys are so patient. Thank you so much. Ray Gordon.
All right.
Yes.
How are you?
Hey, lady. Ray is, she's a neighbor of mine, actually, and we get to talk all the time, so... I'm going to ask you just a few questions, and then we're going to take some calls here in a little bit, too.
All right. You can call.
So, Ray, with nearly two decades, girl, he's talking about aging himself.
That's what I'm saying.
2 decades of community service, from chairing neighborhood associations to leading nonprofit organizations. How do you believe these experiences have prepared you as in your role or and as your aspiration of your role as Clackamas County Commissioner?
You know, in 2005, I got a job at Clackamas County in the tourism department. And so I moved to the city of Oregon City because I don't like to commute. And my commute became 6 minutes. It was great. And I still drove, but that's another story. So while I was there, I was renting this house around the corner from the county, and I got involved in my first committee. It was the Parks and Rec Committee, and having a chance to be able to build up what the core values of that group was, and what the Parks and Rec was going to work on. You know, people wanted dog parks, and people wanted more playgrounds, and to see it come to fruition after you had worked on it, it kind of gave me this sense that you really can make a difference with one voice that becomes a chorus. So then it led me to keep on going on to other committees like, urban renewal committees and budget committees, and and then to become chair of 2 neighborhoods. And while I was there, I really, really saw how people didn't think they can make a difference. And that really bothered me. Every time somebody said, it's not going to change, it's not going to matter anyway, it was a call for me to get them inspired and involved. And I think that's what really calls me to this position is wanting people to have voice and feel like they have value and show them the way. And that really readied me to do that in a bigger way.
So I'm curious, because living in the same vicinity, we see a lot of the same things. Homelessness, mental health, and affordable housing is something I wanted to bring up with you. Mm-hmm. You've highlighted homelessness, mental health, and affordable housing as key issues for you. What initiative solutions do you propose to address these interconnected challenges in Clackamas County?
And that's smart. It's definitely interconnected. And as Nick was talking about, I mean, mental health is so important. you know, there was a time when I was dealing with a situation with a family member. I didn't know how to deal with what was going on, and I got help from the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and there was a family to family class, and to be in this class where people were having similar issues or issues where you went, wow, I had no idea that even existed, and to have people help each other was such an eye opener. That, you know, mental health and mental illness, the stigma needs to be taken off of it.
Right.
So what happened in that NAMI class was amazing. The whole idea that when you have a heart issue, people rally around you, mm-hmm. right? And
right.
that's an organ. And then, but if you have a brain issue, people are hands off. And the more that we have, you know, we take the stigma off, the more the better. And I think people in elected positions need to model that behavior and have the open conversations, because mental health and mental illness goes into everything. Some people that are houseless, they may have drug problems, but they may have drug problems because they're self-medicating their mental illnesses. So in those three different categories, so houselessness, one thing that I am not seeing that I want to see, and it's possible that it's happening, but they're not talking about it, is to mediate with family members, to connect mediation with mental health services, to work together in tangent, to make the families know where their relatives are in their process. So I'm not saying that it means that they're going to open their house, because there may be a possibility that's the reason why they're not there. But the more you involve the family and the more you mediate that, and I think that's really important. The county already has a mediation program, and the county already has mental health. And if they can work together to work on that, I think it's, you know, hit it at the core, which is mental health. I mean, when you don't know where you're going to live, you know, and during COVID, I lost, I was behind in my mortgage. I didn't know if I was going to lose my house. I didn't know how I was going to eat, and I got help with food, and I got help. And I, you know, worked with a mortgage company, and thankfully I saved my house.
Good.
But if I had, honestly, if I had become homeless, I don't know if I would have told my family. I would have tried to work it out on my own. But if there was a mediator helping me with services that was mediation between me and my family, and they reached out, I might go and stay. So you never know. Every houseless neighbor, and I call them neighbors because they are our neighbors.
Are.
Every houseless neighbor has a different story, and we can't put just this big blanket on it all. So that's one thing is really to beef up the mental health and the mediation. And also, you were talking about healthcare. And healthcare and pricing, and I really need we need to make counseling more than affordable. We need to make it free.
That's agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. But then you're talking about we could talk about this later, but
yeah,
then
yeah.
you're talking about the level of education that these counselors have and how they're getting paid. And oh my goodness, we might have to start charging businesses taxes.
Yeah.
Make them pay their fair share, because these are needed resources.
Right. Well, I have a creative background as well. I actually taught you, we were talking about, you know, our families. And so my family is half artists and half public servants. My mom was, you know, animal control and code enforcement. She's still code enforcement. She's in her 70s, and she got a new job a couple years ago for a county, you know, being that.
Wow.
And she also did disaster management. Her mom was in a nurse. But on the other side, her dad was a painter. Her grandma was a pianist. And it's like, you know, I have these two sides of me that I could work for the greater good to bring them together.
Right.
And I think that having people in leadership roles, like a county commissioner, you got to have some creativity.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of creativeness that can be brought in. Like volunteers, there's so many volunteers.
That's true.
That could be used, that have, or like retired, that have that have passed in counseling. So it's not necessarily that we have to throw a bunch of money and start taxing, which I'm not really for, to tax small business. I'm a very,
not
very
small business.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not talking. I'm talking.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm talking Nike. I'm talking Intel. Oh, okay. I'm talking Kaiser. I'm talking the the Mammoth. Kroger,
okay.
The mammoth organizations in this.
Because I'm like small business.
I'm a small business owner.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
I say no, right?
Okay,
because
good.
We pay because they don't.
Right.
Right. The CEO of Kroger made $2 million in 2022. That is the CEO. That is what he took home. The CEO of Lyft made $13 million in 2022. Here we are, you know, trying to make, you know, struggling through anyway. That's how.
Yeah, but going back to that, I want to say that that there's some creative. So recently, they cut the volunteer program at the county,
and I think that was the wrong thing to do.
That's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
And even though the gal, her name's Wendy, she's amazing. She's been with the county forever. Thank God she was moved to another situation, because you don't want to lose these I call them superstar employees.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I used to work with them because they're amazing, but I think that is the wrong way to go, because if you want to lessen taxes and you don't want to do taxes and you don't want to charge anymore, you got to look at this volunteer system needs to be grown. And when I went back to the disaster management for a short term after I lost everything in COVID and I was able to solidify a temp contract job, I found out that that different departments have different background checks, depending on that. And the volunteer program needs to come back, and they need to have it really make it more efficient. Like you have, you know, one type of background, second type of background, and get these people to work because they want to serve their county too. And there's so many incredible people that are willing to step up and serve as a volunteer. And a lot of them could be counselors.
So and I believe that you're talking about the DEI office that Clackamas County closed.
No, that's a different thing.
Oh, that's a different thing.
Both those things I am very disappointed in.
So where that comes through is inclusion and morale. As an employee leader focused on morale and advancing inclusion practices, what initiatives would you prioritize to ensure an inclusive and supportive environment within county government and the broader community? Can you specifically address the issue of the current commission's decision to close the DEI office?
You know, the sad part is there is so many superstar employees really trying to make a difference. And what people don't realize is the deep connection between morale in an employee and how they deal with the citizens. So the less the morale, the more that the employees don't think that commissioners have their back and have other people's backs, the more they're just not going to be up for it. Not saying that they're doing bad customer service on purpose. It's just not going to be as enthusiastic and
right.
as much as they need to have. So I found out. So I went to the leadership DEI group, and I was talking to the lovely gal that was heading that up, and she made sure to tell the group why I was there that she's still doing some of the work.
Okay.
But that's good. However, words matter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So her title is not going to be a community relations specialist, but when I worked with the county, when I worked for the county and tourism, my title was office specialist too, but my public title was tourism assistant.
Right.
So there's no reason why their working title can't be community relations specialist and their public title diversity. Yeah.
Thank you, Ray. I really appreciate it. We're going to have a quick song here for just a few minutes, just to kind of give us a reset, because we're going to open up the lines.
Oh, right.
If you guys are cool with having questions, we're
going to
open up the phone lines. Go ahead. Let's take a little break here.
Woo!
Child of God, he was walking along.
So it sounds like we have a caller. Thank you, Zach. Hello, caller.
Thank you, Zach.
Hello? We have a caller?
Oh, they probably won't be able to hear the caller, but...
So while we're waiting for that to come around, I had to pick that song. It's just because the way that this show was created was during the Trump administration. This show's like, well, it's probably older than that. The show's 12 years old, so it's way before the Trump administration. But I got involved during the Trump administration, in fact, just before. And Caleb Burns was the original host. He was the person who developed the show and got it going. And all of his content was from historical revenue, your historic reference, mm-hmm. right? And he had a plethora of history that he drew off of. The migrant lady with the babies, I did some research on that, and I forget her name. I think it was Maria, but I'm not sure. She was prominently behind Caleb in every show. He had a banner, or like the great big display boards. Hello, we have a caller. I was telling them about he had a great big display board behind him that he clipped the green. It was that green felt. Uh-huh. He clipped the green felt to him, and it had the pictures. It had, I don't know if you guys know of Stephanie Miller and Tom Hartman.
Oh, Stephanie Miller.
Love Stephanie. Tom Hartman and Randy. He didn't have Randy Rhodes on there.
I don't remember.
But he had all of the progressive talk radio people listed on one side and her in the middle, and then he had some progressive stuff happening over
here.
She
lived in L.A. for a little while, I think. Didn't she live
Stephanie,
in L.A. for a little
bit? Yeah, yeah.
Her, is she back up here now?
Father was in the her father was part of the Goldwater election. Yeah.
Yeah,
she
loved
used
her.
To talk about that all the time.
I used to call her all the time.
Did you? You know, I really like Stephanie Miller, but the content just is a little overboard sometimes for me. You know? We have a caller? Did we get through?
No, I don't know. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hello. What is your name?
My name is Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, and I'm calling about the housing issue. And, of course, there are a lot of people with mental illness who are in this housing crisis. And there are an awful lot of people who are in this housing crisis who do not have addiction and who do not have mental illness.
Thank you.
Are simply too damned high. And I think it's because the real estate industry is too big for its britches. And I'm wondering what either of you, either of the candidate potential people, have to say about that, about the fact that the rents are too damn high and they keep getting higher and higher and higher, and that the people who are suffering the most from this happen to be older women. Some of these people are people that I know, and their rents keep getting raised. And are we forcing people's grandmas into homelessness? It's not just about mental illness. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to say about that? That is my question.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I had some time in Sandy in the last 2 years where I helped run a warming shelter during the coldest times of the year. And I was really surprised by the fact that a lot of folks talk a lot about our housing crisis, and the implication is always that these are people coming from someplace else and that they're not from our communities. And that was really dispelled for me, the fact that the folks that we were talking to had really just fallen on a hard time. There's one gentleman I can think of who needed a heart surgery and who couldn't get that heart surgery done because he was homeless. And it was through really no fault of his own. His wife has passed away and he couldn't afford his mortgage anymore. And he just didn't know what to do after that. And so this heart surgery wasn't happening because he was on the streets of Sandy. And it wasn't until someone actually reached out to him and said, hey, what can we do to provide you with the resources to make sure that this is something that doesn't have to happen to you anymore? And I think a lot of people slip through those cracks.
You know, and I agree. And also, Joan, it really hits home, because a couple days ago I was talking to a friend of mine, and I didn't realize that she had been living in her car a few years ago. It was for a short time, but she was having a hard time going to shelters because she was a single woman. She's in her 50s. She doesn't have family. She told me she's not on drugs, and she had a hard time finding any help. And I think that's something we have to look at too, because
I'm not only talking about help. Mm. A friend of mine who is doing pretty well, and she has enough money to pay her rent, and she's not going through a particular hard time, but her rent was just raised, and it keeps getting raised and raised and raised and raised, and she's on a fixed income. There's no, what's she going to do? Go get a low-paid job at Fred Meyer's. And if you walk into a place like Fred Meyer's, you'll see a lot of older people working behind the cash register that maybe would love to retire. And their hard time is that the rents are too damn high, and there's no place to rent that a person can afford.
Absolutely. That's a major issue. And I can say, as a state representative, if I am sent to Salem, or actually when I am sent to Salem, I can say that I would definitely advocate for something that would work towards capping those rent increases and making sure that there's a certain amount that they can raise the rent, because we want to be fair to homeowners or to people who are renting, but we need to make sure that these folks stay in their homes. There's also a large contingent of the governor's budget for housing that contains some funding for making sure that it provides grants and funding to folks to keep them in the houses that they're in right now, which is another very important issue, and I think that's what you're kind of talking about too.
Part of it, but the point is, why are the rents so high in the first place?
Because
other people suffering, and the victims are being blamed.
Right.
And if your rent is $1,800 a month, and you're living in a small studio, there's something really wrong with that. And it's not like it even has to be kept there. The rents have to go down because it's devaluing our dollar.
Yeah, we got to figure out how to do that. It's, you know, the house across the street from me was renting for $1,000 about 6 years ago, and now it's just rented for $2,000, and that's just incredible to me. I don't know how people are going to be able to do it. And you're totally right to worry about that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for taking the call.
And thank you for caring about your friend.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there we go. You know, that was one thing that it majorly made me want to run for office, and that was getting to work with folks in that warming shelter and meeting them where they were, and really trying to. We had young men who were in the, you know, 18, 19, 20, who were suffering homelessness and not knowing what to do, and those cold weather incidents that we have bring them out of their hiding places, and we need to be able to be ready to support them when they are. When they are in need,
and it's the whole thing that everybody has a unique story, and we can't put a blanket on houseless. It's this, it takes a little bit longer to go through each story, but that's what is needed.
Yeah, and I like the assumption that it's not just mental health and it's not just drug abuse. There's a lot of things that go into economically to what.
Like my own story is that I already knew that if I was going to end up without my house, you know, I mean, if something happened, I wouldn't tell people that I was, you know, not under my roof anymore. So
and you know what kills me? I left for Seattle in 1995 because I was homeless. I was in broadcasting school, and working three jobs, and I still could not afford so I finished broadcasting school, and as soon as I was done, I went to Seattle.
I think that's why it's really important to get those family ties going. I mean, even if it's, there's no chance, they need to have those family ties, and that mediation needs to happen, and it's just not happening as far as I can see, or that I've that I've talked to people, and it's not.
Hey, Joan, did they answer your questions?
Oh, she's gone.
Okay, I was trying to get other things organized there. So, that is a serious issue, and the $500 million coming out of Kotek's office. So I've been seeing a lot of controversy about that and developers and stuff like that. So do either of you have any insight into programs that she can lean into that would deviate from developer greed and stuff?
I do like the fact that she has been a lot more specific with this new proposal about the urban growth boundaries and about situations in which certain cities, there's a whole bunch of stipulations. I was just reading them today about under what circumstances they can grow their urban growth boundaries, cities can, and they're making it a little bit more difficult and making sure that they're using the land that's already been appropriated. And so I do appreciate that was one concern that folks had, that we not get into a situation like where we have been in the past, where low and middle income houses were the excuses for expanding urban growth boundaries,
right,
when those houses didn't get built or weren't developed. Right.
Or if they were super expensive.
Right. They're not low income and middle income.
Which brings up another question that I've been trying to get somebody to answer, and I don't know that you two can answer it, but somebody out there has to be able to. There are naked pieces of land in residential communities,
oh, yeah,
under an acre and an acre, that the land has nothing on it, no house, no plumbing, no, it's naked.
Mm-hmm.
$500,000 in Clackamas County. I have looked for, we live in Molalla, and I really, everything I do is here in Portland, so I'm kind of trying to get closer to Portland.
Sure.
Every house that we look at, there's a handful at 300,000 now.
Yeah.
It used to be a handful under, but now they're 300,000 and higher. A handful. How are people supposed to live in Clackamas County?
Great.
Right.
How are millennials supposed to be able to buy houses in Portland or Clackamas County?
Well, they don't, and that's a real problem.
Right?
And then Nick, you talked about going up and down up in the Mount Hood area,
mm-hmm,
that there's jobs, but they can't keep their employees because there's no housing.
Yeah.
And there's a group, I don't know if you know it about them, but it's the Mount Hood. I remembered
Livability
it.
Went to
Mount Hood
Coalition.
Livability Coalition. And so what they're trying to do is they're a great group of people that have gotten together to work on livability among, you know, being Airbnbs and vacation rentals. And the problem is there's some restaurants that have openings, but they can't fill them.
I want to thank you guys, Nick Walden-Poblin and Ray Gordon. Thank you for being with me this evening. We are on the way out, and
right,
I really appreciate you guys. PDX Progressive Talk Radio in Portland on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Listen to it.
It's heard a long walking a line, come so far, but you're still far from fine. The world on your shoulders.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 3. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers, including